Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to do my best job to upload a show to that site every single week. But the most efficient way that you can listen to my podcast is by going through the iTunes search engine. Simply enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter lordgaul. Lord Gaul was my username when I first got into kickboxing forums, Kakutugi, K1 fans, K1 USA. Like when I first got into it, that was the name that I used. So I want to thank everybody for joining me, with everybody for following and keeping up with the podcast. I got a lot to talk about. Got some stadium stuff finally. I didn't have the time to watch a lot of the stadium fights in the last few months. I apologize for that. I'd only been able to watch some of the major kickboxing cards, but things cleared up because it was a fight week for me, and because I'm not training as much as my fighters are just doing a lot cutting their weight, it was a good time for me to sit down and focus, get some good Muay Thai action, and it was amazing because I really, really enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed watching the stadium stuff. I really enjoyed getting caught up in kickboxing. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Cloris, we got to talk about the Glory card because there's a couple of things going into it. As I mentioned before, I was surprised that Glory didn't have two broadcasts. I thought they were going to do the day one live, and then they were going to do a night one for the Americans, even though the Americans had the option to watch it live as well, of course. My trouble with the card, or my trouble with the idea behind this fight card, was the fact that it seemed to focus mainly on Spike England, which had a live broadcast and live debut, and the action was good. I'm surprised if that's your focus, that you wouldn't have a Jordan Watson on the card, or that you wouldn't have a Liam Harrison on the card. If the idea was to appeal to that audience with this live kickboxing broadcast, why we wouldn't add a, English fighter anywhere in the card, even a Chad Sugden, a new star. I was a little bit surprised by that, but outside of it, as far as kickboxing action goes, the kickboxing product does not fail. The elite kickboxers in the world put on absolutely fantastic performances, and it was showed once again here. Not only was it shown in terms of the skill level and the talent, but the effort that's put in creates the most entertaining fights. So if you got to watch the Glory card, you really were in for a treat once again, because top to bottom, the card was awesome. It was their best looking card, despite the fact that they had so many people drop out, so many injury replacements on the Super Fight series. They still were, and even won in the tournament. We were still able to get a really entertaining, action-packed kickboxing event. So very, very pleased to bring you my breakdown of the Glory event. And we'll go ahead and start with the most significant fight in the card, the Glory heavyweight champion, and still, Rico Vahiervin, as he gets a five-round decision over Benjamin Adebuwe. I really thought that, when I look at it, I look at these athletes, and I look at the era of heavyweights that I grew up with. The athletes that we have now are far superior technically than the athletes that we had back in the day. I know some people are going to be like upset, and they're going to think about how clean and cool the flash kicks were of Andy Hoog and that kind of stuff. If you look at the stuff where Andy Hoog got his big KOs, he threw power hooks in the pocket as a smaller guy. You look at Mike Bernardo. Mike Bernardo, he actually developed a pretty decent low kick towards the end, but really he was a guy who just let them bombs go, score big shots. Jerome LeBanner, he let his bombs go, but he kind of did it more of in a technical manner. But as far as all-around kickboxing flow, those athletes in the early days in the heavyweight era, you watch some of those fights. There were some nasty-looking fights on K1 in the late 90s, early 2000s. This era seems to be a lot cleaner in terms of technique, and Rico Vahiervin is the cornerstone of that. He is the main guy heading that way. He's a guy who you wonder, because he doesn't have KO pop. Even Benjamin Adebuwe came out, when they were kind of doing their pre-press, talking about how Rico doesn't have that KO pop. Even despite that, his kickboxing is so amazing and so clean. I mean, it's just, to watch him technically, I just kind of marveled. And after the fight was over with, when the crowd cheered his combinations, when they cheered his work, because they had a very good crowd, very intelligent crowd towards knowing, understanding kickboxing and kickboxing and fight flow in general. I was so pleased with Rico Vahiervin's performance. Starts off in round one. Benjamin Adebuwe is on fire. Like, Benjamin Adebuwe had the snappiest jab in the beginning. Like, Rico put his guard up and that jab went through every single time. Benjamin Adebuwe, they did a interview with him right before he came out. He said, I'm going to focus on boxing more and going to go ahead and, you know, try to send some shots and try to, you know, I didn't necessarily say the word, try to score a KO, but he says he's going to take care of business kind of deal. And I thought round one, he did everything that he said. He stayed in the pocket. He threw snappy combinations. He was able to score big on Rico despite Rico's guard and his defense. He's able to score. He didn't go combination to a kick until like maybe late after the 2 minute mark into the round, or like 2 minutes total of fighting action. And then I'd say for 2 minutes and 30 seconds, he had controlled the action. And in the last 30 seconds, Rico Verhoeven started to figure it out a little bit, started to figure out his range and, you know, a couple combinations to kicks. And then the round ends. Round two through five is a kickboxing clinic by Rico Verhoeven. First of all, I've mentioned this before. He is one of the rare guys that can score a combination where he throws his rear power leg at the inside rear leg of his opponent. So Adebuyi, who is standing in an orthodox position, he's hitting the inside of his right leg, which is something that you don't see from a lot of people, because really, you are lined up for the right hand. That's why it's so rare. Plus, if you don't kick at the right angle, your foot could hit a shin on the lead leg, or you can go hit a knee on the lead leg if you come too wide, so you really have to have the angle on that. Rico got that offense going. Combination kick to the outside leg. Combination kick with a switch kick. Combination kick to the outside rear leg. Combination kick to the outside inside leg. Like he just kept flowing. And then one of the most underrated parts about Rico Verhoeven's game is he's got one of the best offsetting teeps that I've seen in kickboxing. It's just as soon as your guy is trying to get the momentum back, come back with his own action, come back with his own combinations, try to get back on the board, or what I call try to erase, when you try to take away from the offensive effectiveness that a person just had on you and you even it up with your own and you kind of erase the moment out of the judge's eyes. Every time Benjamin would try to get off and get himself back into it, Rico would just have a perfectly timed teep that would just offset him and then back to work. And then after the third and fourth round in particular, I think there was a moment where Benjamin Adebuyi was like, okay, I'm going to fight back. And he really started to let the hands go. He was game throughout, despite the fact that he lost. He was game throughout the fight, and he had a moment in the fourth where he really let it go. But Rico had already done the damage on the legs. And Rico scoring that, you know, that rear power leg to the inside rear leg of Benjamin Adebuyi, he hurt him. And then Rico quickly went into a clinch position and then threw knees at that leg. Super slick stuff. The first time he did it, the ref, you know, missed it and then thought that he had got Benjamin Adebuyi in the groin. From what I could see, it did not look like it scored that way. It looked like it was a clean score to that leg. And then he continued to work. After five rounds, it was absolute perfect kickboxing clinic. And I know Rico was a little disappointed in himself, because when you're that dominant, you probably want to try to get a guy out of there. And I think his corner wanted to see if he tried to get a guy out of there. But credit to Benjamin Adebuyi. He wasn't trying to get, he wasn't about to go. You know what I'm saying? He was gained throughout. He had a good chin. He stood up to all the kicks. And he was just beating in kickboxing. His spirits are high now. You watch him on Instagram. He's already posting pics like, hey, I want to be in the number one spot. That guy has, you know, despite the fact that, you know, Rico Verhoeven's like 5 years younger than him, maybe even 6 years younger than him, Rico Verhoeven has more experience against elite level guys, because sometimes he was thrown in there with better guys. And, you know, before he was ready, but once he got his skills up, he was able to get to the top and stay at the top. Rico hinted that he'd love to fight a Badr Hari, if, you know, Badr Hari's legal situation would allow him to fight. I would definitely love to see that. Rico Verhoeven is in need of some wealth of depth, I'd say, at the heavyweight division. It's the most shallow since I've been paying attention to the sport. And I think Kunlun, they've got some guys, and, you know, Super Combat, they might have a couple guys here and there. But the division's very different, because this is probably the first time. The last few years are probably the first time in my life where the heavyweight division is the division that people think the least of in kickboxing sport, which is just insane, because kickboxing was at its height when K1 was, you know, its most popular, and those guys were heavyweights. So we'll see what comes. They got to get another guy for Rico, so I won't be surprised they put together a heavyweight tournament. I still think Gokhan Saki has a good fight with Rico Verhoeven. I think the nature of how that fight went, with that really horribly called down in Chicago, where Gokhan Saki stopped trying to kickbox for points and started trying to find the big shot to get Rico Verhoeven, you know, to get the down back, it's that changed the game a lot. So I would like to see him come back. If they could ever get Tyrone Spong back, I would love to see Tyrone Spong fight Rico Verhaeven. There are some good quality kickboxers for him to fight. They're just 209 guys that probably need to move up. So hopefully we'll get some good, entertaining kickboxing from Rico Verhaeven. He's bringing his part of it. The champion is bringing it every fight. We just need some viable contenders that the audience likes and follows to compete against this guy. Going to go ahead and go into the lightweight tournament. Lightweight tournament introduced two guys who I think one of them has been awesome for a while. Both of them have been awesome for a while. But this is the first kind of big time stage for everybody to kind of really pay attention to them. Let's go ahead and start with the first fight on the card. Sitichai Tsongping-Nong goes against David Kyria. I remember looking online, some people thought that this was an upset just because they weren't familiar with Sitichai. For those who listened to the podcast last week, this was the easiest call on the entire card for me. Sitichai, his style, no chance of Ikuria, had a chance against him. I mean, those left kicks to the body were just absolutely just awesome. Sitichai starts fast. He is the opposite of, and I mentioned it in the last podcast, the reason why this guy is such a good tie for international style is because of his starts. Because he comes out, he brings the fight. It's, Vinny Shorman said it best. Vinny Shorman said, if you're way better than the guy, don't prove it to me by just playing around with him. Prove it to me by getting him out of there. And Sitichai comes with an aggression and an anger to really try to hurt guys. And he is, you know, like I said, he beat Andy Sauer earlier this year. He's got some good international wins. I mean, he's got a, you know, good international loss to Don Salvador. But he's a guy who brings the fight. And this fight, David Kyria was actually doing much better with his hands than I thought. Like he threw aggressive, he threw hands, and Sitichai really was able to stay strong, continue to score that body kick, and then once he saw that he had him hurt, he put straight left hand downstairs, he put a knee downstairs, and he went back to the kick. And it wasn't just that it was the body kick by itself. It was a series of offense to get a guy out of there. And it's something that I play with at my gym all the time. I call it returning to the scene of crime. It's the idea of when you go back to where you've already done work. And he had scored the body kick consistently and he built on it. I'm going to go back down there with the knee. I'm going to go back down there with a straight left hand. It's how you get a guy out of there to the body. It's absolutely beautiful stuff by Sitichai. So good stuff by him. He moves on into the finals of the tournament. David Kyria, of course, suffered some losses. I think that he is, you know, one round away from us really not considering David Kyria one of the elite guys in the world. But he did come off with what was the upset, you know, probably one of the upsets of the year last year when his comeback victory over, mine's going blank right now. But his comeback victory in the final fight as he went against Andy Ristie. And I thought that the Andy fight showed how good Andy was and showed his separation, and it just showed the grit and toughness of David Kyria. But as far as consistently beating the highest level guys, when he was matched up with Robin van Roosmalen, I knew that that was probably going to be trouble for him. When I saw this matchup, I knew it was going to be trouble for him. He still has some things to work on. He's still a good fighter, but I do think that there is a level of separation between him and some of the more elite guys, despite the fact that he got that big win last year. Josh Jauncey put on one of the more beautiful kickboxing performances you're ever going to see against Jim Kalabali. And it's interesting because I really thought that Jauncey was prepared to fight at this. You know, that's the big advantage that he had. But the fact that he's gone through three opponents, he went from, you know, he had Larson, and then after Larson was out, he had Chris Basuku, and then Chris Basuku makes weight and then has a medical issue and can't fight after making weight. So after everything's cleared, after everything's good to go, then he can't go. And then Jaime Kalabali, who's on the undercard fight, gets moved into the tournament. Shout out to him for showing that kind of toughness and stepping up and competing right away on short notice against a guy that you didn't prepare for at all. And he went out there and he performed to the best of his ability. Josh Jauncey, combination kick flow is unchallenged. Like it's not a question with him, because that is something that you look at, particularly with guys in America, and you're starting to see that the Canadians have kind of got it down on the North American side of the world or whatever. The Canadians have got that. There are some guys that are starting to be produced that have really good kickboxing flow. America, clearly, we're starting to build, but we just don't have enough good athletes that do kickboxing, and we don't have enough promoters that promote kickboxing, so it's going to be really tough for them to close that gap. You've got to do it in practice, and then you've got to do it with the few opportunities that you have to fight in a year. Josh Johnson, he hasn't had a whole bunch of fights, but because he's gone over to Holland, he's had so many training opportunities with, you know, Andy Sauer and the guys at Material Gym, and he's developed that relationship. For those who watch it, you probably saw Andy Sauer in the corner with him. He is a young athlete who really can, you know, stick to the kickboxing style. Like he just, he was good with his combination and kick flow. He did a great job of catching Jaime Calabali's kicks. And then as soon as he catch his switch kick or his teep with his lead leg, he would immediately put a hook low kick behind it. And then every time Jaime Calabali would be standing in place or moving backwards, combination low kick. It just absolutely smooth, beautiful kickboxing. Jaime had some moments. He has a good kind of swinging knee where he would step and his hips would switch, and then he would fire the knee up from a side angle. He was catching Johnson more in the arm with it. If he could have got it up a little bit higher, maybe it swings through and gets to the jaw. Or if he can get behind that right arm, maybe he can get to, you know, a more vital spot where the score could be big. I thought that he, you know, bit down his mouthpiece and tried to throw back here and there. I just thought that the work to the legs were just done. And then at the end of the round, the combination flow, knee comes up and catches him on the chin, and he goes down, and then he goes down from a low kick. And at first, they, you know, counted, and they restarted the fight, and the fight ended. Then later, they realized it's a two-down rule because it was a tournament. But it was still good stuff by Calabali and his endurance and his toughness and just absolutely beautiful kickboxing by Josh Johnson that really won the crowd towards him. We go to the last fight, and this is where Josh Johnson is going to need more experience. He's going to need more fights. Sidishai was just so much stronger in the final round. Again, it doesn't have anything to do with, in my opinion, that Johnson fought three rounds and Sidishai fought two, you know, one and a half, or however you want to put it. I thought the difference was Sidishai was so confident in his body kick, so confident in his punch range. Don't be fooled by Sidishai's body kick, thinking that that was the only thing that he scored effectively the other night, because everybody's in love with that left leg to the body. Oh no, his 1-2s and 3-2s were right down the middle. There were points where Kyrgios was blocking, and then it was almost like watching Georgia Petrosian, just as an example, where just the clean shots just go right through the guard, bop, bop, and then he stays right in the pocket. He doesn't leave. He's waiting for you to open up. As soon as you open up with a strike, he puts the body kick in. His hands had a lot to do with his success, and I thought that Johnson was game. He kept getting up. He kept trying. But Sidishai, subtle movement. Quick step to the left here, gets you off balance, makes you reset your kickboxing flow. You try to get into your hands, he steps to the outside before you can finish with a low kick. Or he steps into the clinch, or he comes with a step of knee. He put on just an absolute clinic of understanding defense, movement, well-timed shots with his step-up knees. Sidishai was amazing. So when they put that title on him, you know, they gave him the award for, you know, what they were, I remember, what was it, right after the event, they're kind of, you know, glory people are talking, they're kind of saying, man, Sidishai as a Thai would appreciate a, you know, an award that would be, you know, representative of, you know, the, you know, all-time legend in Raymond Dekkers. And he was kind of talking about how, you know, he talked to his camp, or the glory people talked to his camp, and they're saying, like, how much it meant and so on to be connected to that. But really, they've got an interesting dilemma here. Part of me wonders if they go with the Sidishai fight with Robert Van Roosman Marlon right away. Do they want Sidishai to fight one more time to appeal to the audience a little bit more? Do they, because Robin is a, you know, all action style guy, and I think Sidishai is as well. But I do wonder, what are they thinking as far as making that fight? Do they make that fight right away? Do they have Robin Van Roosmalen, who's already doing good stuff? We'll talk about Robin Van Roosmalen's fight with Steve Moxon, something they did for charity and for the people who run Glory, because it was their charity, or they're a part of it. I'm curious how they go about that. I wonder if they give him one more shot to be seen before an audience, because not too many people saw this card. They because, like I said, it was played during the work hours here in America. Their best bet would have been to at least play two broadcasts, but Cops makes, you know, gets huge rating for them in the States, the television show Cops, where they follow people around and they answer police calls, and, you know, it's just, they pretty much go out to what would be considered third world America at some places, and they just, like, watch these, you know, crazy events and get arrested for, you know, domestic and drug abuse and that kind of stuff, whatever. But it's a hugely popular show for Spike, and it does crazy, you know, viewership, because it's just something that people have on in the background for a lot of America. Whereas the kickboxing product is going to bring eyes to watch kickboxing as opposed to eyes who watch casual TV. And this product was put on during a day where a lot of those eyes couldn't get out of work to go see it. So if you didn't DVR it, you missed out on it. And now you got to wonder how many people saw Sidney Chai's performance, how many people saw Josh Johnson's performance. We got to see what happened there. And I'm wondering if they might be a little hesitant before they put the fight between Sidney Chai and Robin van Roosmalen together. Next fight, the last fight on the main card, is Zach Wakasa did what he was supposed to do against Carlos Brooks. I got to put it this way. Brooks actually showed me some decent skill considering. Like I thought that his boxing was okay. I thought that it shows for those of you who listen to my podcast show, I try to do a little bit of technical as I break these fights down. This is how a jab can open someone's defense up. I thought Carlos Brooks was hip to the hook in the beginning. I thought he had his right hand high. I thought he landed combinations well. Zach Wakasa, he's still working on his kickboxing flow, so he'll whip a big leg kick by itself, but he usually doesn't have cross hook low kick or double hook low kick or jab jab cross hook low kick. He doesn't have that kind of game yet, but he throws heat, and he's got big powerful shots. And I thought that in the beginning Carlos was able to get his hands up and score some pretty good combinations. Then all of a sudden they started to jab with each other. Zach Wakasa would walk him down, jab him, and that jab was landing like a power right hand. Like, Brooks's head was snapping back, and all of a sudden, when you think that you're safe in your guard and someone's jabbing through it, you don't feel the guard is safe anymore, so you leave it and you start to use your feet to get away. And that's how jabs open people up. Now, because you don't believe that your guard can defend you anymore, you're now using your feet, and you're trying to use your movement to get away from the jab. And that's what the person who wants to score a hook wants to do. Because if they can get you to try to defend their hook by leaning back, they got you. And they got into a situation, jab opened him up, a left hook came through. Zach Wakasa almost finished it, on the ropes, but then they came in for a standing eight count. And then after the standing eight count, the fight was restarted, and then it just was a matter of time before Carlos Brooks took a big time left hook that dropped him and ended the fight. Zach Wakasa, still growing and learning, still trying to get better. He is not, in my opinion, in the title picture as of yet. He's got to win some fights. Wouldn't mind seeing him in another four-man tournament again. Adding to that, Saulo Calavari should get the next title shot, and if it's not Gokhan Saki, of which they're still negotiating with, I wouldn't go crazy if they put Zach Wakasa in there. I wouldn't mind if they, did that fight again. But he needs to be active. And one thing that I really like that we've got from, as I mentioned, Myron Dennis and Brian Collette, those guys got into that legacy kickboxing tournament, which means they got themselves at least one or two more fights outside of the glory schedule. Zach Wakasa needs something like that. You won't be able to do it on a diet of just kickboxing fights alone. And with that said, I absolutely love that Zach Wakasa is being pushed after beating a guy who they would have originally been pushing in Pat Barry. He's getting a lot of opportunities since that win. I just think that he needs more fights than just fighting on the biggest stage to develop his craft. So, good stuff from the main card. Go ahead, break down the undercard. Oh my gosh. Mamudo Keta gets knocked out in the first round by Jamal Ben Sadek. Jamal Ben Sadek was originally supposed to be fighting Freddie Camayo. Freddie Camayo, I had beating Jamal Ben Sadek. This replacement was, people were all over this fight. They kind of joked about how Keta was undersized and how he was shouldn't have been in there and how this is just another. Jamal Ben Sadek is in need of a legit contender and a legit fight. And the reason why I say that is because people are kind of starting to see him as kind of more of like a gimmick when he really is a athlete who's got like some good power, and we want to see more of his kickboxing skills. He did what he was supposed to. He blew out a guy who shouldn't have been in there with him. The problem was afterwards, people only talked about the guy shouldn't have been in there with him. But Sadek was able to score, which looked like kind of more of a lead kind of uppercut kind of finishes. Keta was going away right as the ref was kind of coming in and trying to stop it. And I really thought that it was an example of what happens when injuries happen and you're not able to find a consistent heavyweight person to slide in there. It's a little bit tougher in the heavyweight division because they have, most of the world's got more guys between the weight of, what would be 70 kgs and 93 kgs than they would guys between, you know, 93 kgs and, you know, 115 kgs. It's a little bit harder to find heavyweights short notice. But Ben Sadik did what he was supposed to do, but now he needs that legit heavyweight contest. He really does. I don't want to hear nothing about Ben Sadik being in title contention. He needs to be in a four-man tournament or in something where he gets some legit opposition. But this was not in a reflection of a high-level kickboxing match. This was a reflection of a one-sided matchup. So hopefully Ben Sadik gets that opportunity because he's got all the strong physical tools, as I mentioned before, but he's just had some fights that got ugly, and he's got some, you know, he's had some struggles against, as I mentioned before, you know, Peter Arts, which was a fight that looked like he was going to win by KO, and he ended up losing by KO. And then he's got the, you know, of course, the situation last year with Hezdy Gurgis, where he, you know, hits him on the ground, and it's just like, there's so much surrounding this guy. Maybe he needs to consistently fight, find him something next month after that. Doesn't need to be in Glory, just needs to be in somewhere. Next fight in the card we're going to talk about is Murad Bozidi as he gets another unanimous decision victory, this time over Philip Verlinden. Murad Bozidi is an awesome kickboxer. 209 pounds is his home, or 93 kgs around there. That's where he's going to be at his best. He is a guy who's been looking for a home in kickboxing. He's been a steady competitor. We're talking about guys who's he's got, you know, the win over Peter Arts, which was short. I mean, he took on an injured Peter Arts, but it was in that tournament, and that's when they kind of had that body kick kind of exchange sort of deal. But, like, his kickboxing flow is really, really good when he competes at this weight. And he's the guy who I think they're using the most in the card. I'm, like, just going back in my mind, I go, man, Murad Bozidi's fought for them a lot. Now Murad's got some, you know, tough losses. I mean, he stopped by Saulo Calavari, if I remember correctly, and he is in need of like a four-man tournament to give him the opportunity to showcase himself as this is a guy that you want to see. But as far as being a consistent fighter for the Glory brand and putting on an entertaining fight, Murad Bozidi brings it. He's got a home in this weight class. He competes very well. I was very pleased with his performance. Philip Verlinden already talking about returning back to the weight class below of middleweight. He called out Joe Schilling, which I do think is a really good fight for him. I think he's just looking to stay busy, and I think that's why he's okay with moving up in weight. I've said it on the show many times before, Philip Verlinden fought middleweight, light heavyweight, heavyweight, and, you know, he's been competitive in a lot of those bouts, but he's lost most of those bouts. So if you can't credit a guy for, you know, fighting at heavyweight, to go up to heavyweight and lose, it just means you want to get the bigger guy. We want to credit him when he competes at his best. The way he looked when he went against Melvin Manhoff, for example, really good stuff in that fight. That, it seems like a comfortable weight class where his, you know, kickboxing skills, and he's not like a big power guy, but I do think that he's at home around that weight class. So I want to see more of Philip Verlinden because he does have entertaining kickboxing, you know, as far as his style goes, but he needs those opportunities. I really think that as they, you know, that's an easy fight to make for the August 8th card, the Vegas card, Verlinden and Joe Schilling, because it's right around the corner. It's 2 months. It's plenty of time for Verlinden. As long as Schilling's fighting in MMA at the end of this month, as long as he's not taking any injuries into him, I think that's a good time to maybe make that fight happen, unless they do California later this year, in which case that'd be the best place because Schilling's a good draw there. Johan Kangulo gets victory over Cedric Dombe. I picked Dombe for the upset, and this was a fight where both guys were throwing blows or whatever, but I do think that it was hard to distinguish them on the card for a little bit, and then I thought that the cleaner shots came through from Kangulo, so I was fine with the decision going his way. I thought that Dombe is just still on the raw side, you know, but I do think that he's a good athlete. He's going to be a good kickboxer moving forward, and then good stuff for Johan Kangulo. Got to see more of him as well. Both of these guys are fighting in weight classes that we need to develop depth in outside of the top guys. And we need more fights from guys who are in that, you know, 77 kg range, you know, middleweight range. Got to start developing that a little bit more. Next fight on the card, and it was an upset just in terms of it being short notice. I didn't give Sergey Adamchuk, I didn't give him much of a chance against Murat Grigoryan because he competes at a lighter weight, and Murat Grigoryan is so good at walking people down, and if you don't have the power to keep him off of you, I think that you are going to have a lot of trouble. And Murat Grigoryan was only able to have that style happen one time. Adamant Chuck was so slick, and I've seen him fight before. He's in one of the more interesting bouts. If you entertain or if you YouTube his name, there was a fight that he has in France where literally I felt like the ref couldn't have been against him more. There was the opportunity where he swept a guy, and then he went for, like, he was in the motion of his combo, and he looked like he was going to go with a kick, but he didn't finish the kick while the guy was on the ground. It just, his leg had been extended. Instead, he slowed it down, and he pulled it back, and they gave him a point for thinking about throwing the kick because he didn't land the kick. So then later in the round, the ref called a break at a really strange time, and Adamant Chuck threw another shot. I think it was in the second round, and then the ref took another point. So I'm like, man, you're down 2 points. He goes back to the corner. Mike Sims' guys are telling him, you got to go out there and throw those bows. And Adamant Chuck comes out there and throws heat. And in that round, he had scored big. He had scored big in all the other rounds. You make the argument he won every round. He just had the points taken away from him. When the scorecards were read and Adamant Chuck won, it's probably one of the more interesting things I've ever seen for an away guy to do in a hometown situation where the judges can go against you so easily. Here, he's smaller. He's going against a bigger guy who's got a good style for walking down smaller guys. And he was as slick as can be. I mean, the way he steps off angles, his straight left hands, how he would score kicks to the body and knees to the body and move. He was all over the place. And Marat Gagorian wasn't able to walk him down. Marat Gagorian really powered down in the second round, or excuse me, powered up in the second round, and walked him down, got him into corners, was able to score offense in series and bunches, and just was able to continue, you know, to find him and so on. And I was surprised that Marat Gagorian wasn't able to sustain it going to the third round, because the third round, he was a different dude. It was back to Adamant Chuck landing his counters. It was a good style versus style type of matchup. But I'm telling you, the moments of ring intelligence by Adamant Chuck made this fight. And you love fights that have different storylines. Clearly, you could have people Dutch kickboxing in, you know, each other back and forth, and then you combination kicks. That's always a very entertaining brand of fighting. But if you can get some diverse styles and both styles have success, those also make great fights. Adamant Chuck was, with his slick style of his counters and his movement and his clean shots and the way he would hold at the right time, the way he'd move at the right time, Marat Gagorian with his pressure style and his offense and walking people down, those are good styles. And both of those styles, when they're working well, they look absolutely wonderful. And I thought that that's what this fight brought. It brought both styles. But in the end, Adamant Chuck clearly won 2-1, and he won 29-28 on all 3 scorecards. Next fight I'm going to go with is Shane Oblonsky. The last fight. Shane Oblonsky gets a unanimous decision over Thomas Adamadopoulos. Again, this was one that I thought that Thomas Adamadopoulos was going to win, despite the fact that he is a smaller guy moving up to the weight. This is not his natural weight class as far as how I see him anyways. I thought that he has competed better at smaller weights, but I was like, man, this guy's got really good international experience. He's going to let his hands go. And there goes those Canadians. Shane Oblonsky put together some really good offense. And if I remember correctly, Shane Oblonsky's from Canada. He might be from the USA somewhere. I just forget. But he did a really good job of just staying ahead in the cards. He got the kickboxing flow going early. He scored from a distance early. He is doing a good job of keeping himself active and getting wins and just waiting his opportunity, you know, because that title doesn't necessarily have a 4-man tournament that they have set up as of yet that I know of. And I think that if he wants to be the featherweight champion, he just has to take his time and wait it out, and the opportunity will come down the road. So, Glory Carter in general was very entertaining. Definitely go check it out. And his name eludes me right now, but there was this black dude that was a ref for like 3 or 4 or 5 of the fights. Whoever that guy is, I had it down. I thought it written down and I lost it. That guy needs to be the number one ref for Glory. He was amazing. Like all he did was let you fight. And that's all I want. Let these guys fight. If there's a sweep, I don't need you to be, you know, stand a guy up and giving a guy a warning. Just let the other guy stand up and go back to the action. I don't want to hear that kind of stuff. Let the fighters dictate what's happening in the fight. I don't want to hear your voice. This guy just kind of stayed cool until he had to step in and, you know, do a count for a down. Or they had to stop the action in the, you know, for his fights, there wasn't a lot of times where he had to stop the action. But for the end of the round, just kind of step in with his hands. And most of the time, he let the fighters dictate the action because the fighters know what they're doing. They've been fighting. And that's what I want to see. I don't want to hear you breaking stuff up. I don't want to hear you getting involved. I don't want to hear you grandstanding the moment a foul happens. I don't want to see you, ref. Yeah, I wish you all the best, but I want you to let the action dictate itself. I want the scorecards to reflect what happened between the two fighters. I don't want to see you. Whoever this black dude was, I cannot think of his name, he should be the number one glory ref. Next fight I'm going to talk about, I'm going to go ahead and go to, let's go ahead and jump all over the world, shall we? We're going to go ahead and go to Kunlun Fights. Kunlun had a, you know, big tournament, been, you know, working itself down through the years. Andre Grismachuk, this guy who's got the victory over Rico Verhierven earlier in the year, Hezzy Gurgis, he's fought on Glory, the Glory brand, several times. And Hezzy Gurgis would be a good option, you know, if he's able to. I mean, he's still got his, you know, legal troubles that he's working his way through, and he's been allowed to compete despite those. He's still working through those legal troubles, but Hezzy Gurgis is a really good option to go against Rico Verhierven for that title, unless they can put a tournament together in which he can, you know, earn it, you know, outright. But he's a good, skilled guy who I think would be a fun fight for him. Hezzy Gurgis and Jafar Wilnis. The Wilnis guys, like I said before, Jafar Wilnis is the least of the two talented brothers going into this tournament, and I would say his brother had much more fanfare, and I really think that this was his best shining moment of his career, this tournament. Go ahead and go into the logistics of it. Jafar Wilnis, he gets a victory over Ashihante. That, of course, isn't going to, you know, turn anybody's heads, but he did work his way through this, through the tournament. Hezzy Gurgis beats Grismachuk, and they make the finals, Wilnis and Gurgis. And the reason why I like it, Hezzy Gurgis went through the toughest route. Like, he really had some good guys, so I was glad that he made it to this title. And in my mind, I'm like, this is going to be a Hezzy Gurgis win. But Wilnis emerges as the winner, and he's the Kunlun Heavyweight Tournament Champion. And the reason why I like Wilnis here is because we need heavyweight stars to emerge. And Hezzy Gurgis is a guy who we've been talking about in the sport for a while. Unfortunately, he's been on the, you know, sour end of some decisions, because you could definitely make the argument that he beat Benjamin Adebuyi. You could definitely make that argument. He's also got, you know, some... the situation with, as I mentioned before, with Ben Sadek, where he was hit on the ground, with Badr Hari, where he's hit on the ground. He's had some really unfortunate situations like that. He fought through this tournament, and he's doing a good job, despite the fact all the legal situations that he's going through. And he got himself to the tournament, and I would have picked him as the more skilled guy. But Wilnis emerged and beat the guy who I would have picked as the favorite, and that's what we need more of. We need more heavyweights to stand out. And Wilnis did himself a great service by winning this tournament, you know, getting this title, young, up-and-coming fighter that we want to see more from down the road. Not sure what I think of the Kunlun title, by the way. Could definitely be the old, you know, the white belt for K1 is still the standard for belts in the world, because that's just an awesome-looking belt. Glory belt's not bad. The standard, of course, is still the old K1 belt. A couple other fights I want to mention on that card. Yostin Klyfertex put on a clinic against Zianis Zuev, and I thought that Zuev was game in certain moments, because I'd watched it from a distant camera one time, but then Fairtex, one of the guys in Yostin Klyfertex's corner, recorded the fight on his phone, and he gave me like a really up close, so I can see that Zuev was throwing with some heat, but he's missing a lot. And Yostin Klyfertex, because it was southpaw versus southpaw, really mean on the front leg, and then he'd step back small, Zuev would look for offense, and Yostin Klyfertex would be right there to counter. For people who watch a lot of Yostin Klyfertex fights, watch some of the old fights that he had with, watch his run in, well, not so much his run in Contender Asia, because he's the way better guy for most of that stuff, but I've watched the fights that he had with John Wayne Parr, because the one underrated thing about him that most people don't realize is how well Yostin Klyfertex can punch in between people punching at him. Like, he steps back and he uses his lead hand kind of more like a hook or a jab to catch you as you're pursuing, and then he puts something big behind it, but he's really good at catching people there, really good. I'm so glad that he signed a contract with them, that he signed a contract with K1, which allows him to, you know, both contracts allow him to fight for both promotions. And the reason why that's big for me is because Thai Fight used to have the highest standards in my heart like 3-4 years ago when it first came out. Fabio Pinka won it. Now it's got like one of the lowest standards in my kickboxing and Muay Thai opinion, like with them doing the rope glove, I mean the ropes for gloves and that kind of stuff, whatever. Just it's almost like it kind of turned into a bit of, you know, freak show-ish. But it still draws, you know, big crowds and people want to come out and see the Westerners get killed. But like for me, I prefer him fighting an elite level kickboxing if I'm not going to get him fighting an elite level Muay Thai. And I really think that it's really big that they signed him. He's getting an opportunity to compete for them. And I would have loved it if they could have been able to slide him into the 70 kg tournament that, you know, they're having in early July. And they still have time to do it. Maybe somebody gets injured. Maybe he can slide in. Maybe he can be reserved. But K1's got time to use him. And that was a title that he wanted all along. Speaking of K1, Bukal Betremek also signed with Kunlun. And they are talking about Kunlun, you know, putting the fight between Bukal and Yotsen Kai together. This is huge for me because in 2007, I went out to Thailand, and one of the few times that I've been out to Thailand, I've been out there, you know, a few times since then. But when I went out there, I went to Fairtex Gym, and Yotsen Kai, he speaks better English than people think. And we were talking, and he said he wants to fight Bukal because Bukal is really famous. And that was in 2007. We are in 2015, and there is a promotion talking about putting that fight together. Now, when Bukal was under Paul Pramuk, it was rumored that he had something in his contract that said he didn't fight other Thais, and he didn't fight Georgia Petrosian. Those were the two fights that he was never going to have according to his contract. So if a promoter was trying to put them together, he wasn't interested. That is trash if that is true, that that's what that contract actually said, but I actually never saw the contract, so I can't stand by, you know, that's what really, really happened. But that was the rumor for a really long time. It was something that kind of emerged on the fight forums. It's all about Twitter now, but back when I first got into it, it was about fight forums. So that was definitely a big one. That was a big thing that fight never materialized. And going to it, K1, they didn't want to have a bunch of Thais dominating their brand. They had Bukal, who has the perfect look for what they were looking for. He was young. He had this. One of my friends first saw Bukal, he said that he looks like a Thai Usher, and I cracked up because I was like, "Hey man, he does look a little bit like the singer Usher." But ideally, he was going to be Thailand's representative, and then he brought more to the table than the Thais that they used before. He had a look, he had a style, his entrance music at the time was really cool. He had the it factor. Bukal had it. So when Bukal came out, that was going to be the tie. If they were going to go with one, any tie, it was going to be him and him alone. Yotsen Kai was actually used on a K1 card. And in that fight, he beat Kamel Alamrani. And he beat him pretty one-sidedly, scored it down in the third. But for whatever reason, despite the fact that Yotsen Kai dyed his hair and, you know, really tried to put on the show and kind of sell himself, they decided to go with Bukal. Or else we could be talking about Yotsen Kai in the way that we talk about Bukal. Because of that, Yotsen Kai had to build his name outside of it. And the biggest way that he did that was, of course, winning the Contender Asia Tournament. And that got him kind of international recognition. His fights with Jiang Wen Par, of which I've said before, I believe he won all three fights, despite the fact that he didn't get the nod in the third one. The fact that he stopped Artem Levin, like, early in the day. Like, Yotsen Kai was an absolute beast. And that body kick is the standard in this sport. You see him land his body kick, everyone knows that's what it looks like when it's at its best. Gets the opportunities in America. There's a chance that he could be fighting on the Lion Fight card on the July 10th card, I believe that is. Yotsen Kai is a star. Like he built his brand outside of K1 in a time when K1 was the everything. So awesome stuff for him. We go to Bukal. Bukal, of course, still a star despite the fact that he's had some rough situations with management, rough situations with where he is in the fight world in terms of fighting for this promotion, or the fact that he was fighting for Thai Fight and throwing him to these bum guys, and he's blowing people out, but he's not who we want him to be. He's not the star that he should be fighting against high-level international opposition. That's what we want. The fact that Kunlun is trying to put this fight together, that is just absolutely awesome. That is the most amazing thing that I've ever heard, and I'm really excited, and I hope that they go forward, and I hope it comes together, and I hope that Bukal's management is of a place where they'll say, okay, Bukal, you and Yotsen Kai can do it. Because Bukal's a fighter. He's going to fight. Paul Pramuk was thinking about his brand, and he's like, I don't want you to go against no Thai, and you guys end up playing the game, and nobody cares. I want people to always care, and I want you to always kill the other guy. I'm going to keep you away from certain individuals. Now that Bukal's got different management, different people around him, got a different gym, I'm hoping that that comes together, because that was 2007, and it's 2015 when Yotsen Kai was saying that he wanted that fight. And he probably wanted the fight before 2007. The other news that came from that, and this absolutely blows me away, and It seems like it's dead because Glory's saying that they have no plans of doing it. But Kunlun says that they're going to try to do a Kunlun versus Glory fight card. That would be amazing if it came true. Because Glory people said no. They said that there hasn't been any talks in that kind of deal, whatever. But if they could do this, it would be the first level event that I think would reflect the K1 greatness in terms of eyes of the world being on kickboxing. So I know Glory is kind of turning it down, but they've got the better fighters and the better athletes. So it's to their benefit, as far as the spectacle goes, to put something like that together. Now, the fear that, you know, your athlete might lose to this person is something that kind of comes up a lot. Like, I remember that used to be the big thing where Bellator had Eddie Alvarez, who's finally going to, you know, fight against Gilbert Melendez this weekend. But when Strikeforce had, you know, Melendez and they had Alvarez, the Bellator, you know, people would always say, my guy, our champion will fight your champion, because people perceive Strikeforce as bigger than Bellator. And it's like Glory feels like they could only lose with a competition with Kunlun. I wouldn't be surprised if they felt that way. But I don't think so at all, because if I'm looking at the rosters, I can see maybe five that could win off of, you know, a lot of the Glory, you know, competitors. But if you did like a 20-fight card, I'm taking Glory to win at least 15, 14 of them. So I hope it comes together. I hope that Glory doesn't dismiss it all the way, because that is the level event that the whole fight world could be like, okay, so there's this Chinese brand of kickboxing that's really putting together big shows. I want to see the athletes on that show go against the athletes in Glory who are shown to me on a regular basis. Going to go ahead and move on to what would be considered a super fight, if you will, in a charity event, as Robert Van Roosmalen goes against Steve Moxon. For 2 minutes, Steve Moxon put on some absolutely awesome defensive kickboxing. The thing that he realized with Robin Van Roosmalen is once Robin Van Roosmalen slows you down or walks you down, Moxon would score a combination and then he'd step back, and Robin Van Roosmalen would step forward to start his own combination. And anytime Robin Van Roosmalen threw the power hand, Steve Moxon would slip and then escape, because Robin almost always came with the left hook. And anytime they were in exchange or they were in the pocket, every time Robin Van Roosmalen would hit him with the right hand, Steve Moxon would slip and make sure he didn't get caught with the left hook. And he kept having moments where Robin Van Roosmalen was throwing at air. And I thought for 2 minutes, he had done a great job. I gave Steve Moxon the first round. I thought that he did a good job of kickboxing. But in that final minute, and I can still see people giving Robin Van Roosmalen round one, Robin Van Roosmalen put together that offense. And in round two, he was putting in that work. Combinations and kicks, really strong, sharp hands. Robin's got that style, man. Like, if you love kickboxing and good kickboxing styles, Robin has his style, and Steve Moxon has the counter style. Steve took some big shots, considering he's going to be fighting Zambides again in, like, you know, a few weeks. He took some big shots, and I thought he did a good job. His corner was so vocal because it was a charity event, so you could hear everything. But I remember there was a moment where he got hit. I remember his corner was yelling like crazy for him to, like, hold on. And it's crazy to hear a, you know, corner yell that so vehemently. But Robin Van Roosmalen clearly takes round two. I thought round three still had some moments for Steve Moxon. Robin Van Roosmalen wasn't as clean as he was in the round before. When it went to the cards, it didn't surprise me that Steve Moxon thought that there was a good chance that he could have possibly won the fight. You know, it would have been a close win, but I can understand him thinking that there was a chance for it. But Robin Van Roosmalen wins his charity event, wins his fight over Steve Moxon. He stays active as a kickboxer, which is very important. And now the next step, most important step, is he's probably fighting Sidichai. If not Sidichai, they're going to have another guy at 154 pounds, 70 kgs for him to compete against, because he is your champion. Going to go ahead and move to the... Well, I'll go ahead and go one more note from Glory, because it was already announced that the next title fight is going to be the August 8th card, I believe, August 7th. And on that card, it's going to happen in Vegas. And the main event of that card is going to be Nicky Holton. He's going to go against Raymond Daniels. And the last kickboxing fight he had, those were the two that competed. I'm not the biggest fan of that fight, you know, because it just happened. But I can understand... they did get Daniels a fight between there for him to kind of go out there and show on somebody. And Nicky Holtzman wants to compete. He wants to fight for the title. He technically should be considered the title holder, but injury kept him from fighting for a title that he already won in a tournament. And I really hoping that he gets the opportunity to, you know, fight consistently for them. And he's still doing his boxing thing, so he's still getting, you know, money as a prize fighter. I'm glad that they're putting this together. I'm curious to see what the whole card shakes out to be, and I'm curious to see who the contenders are going to be at middleweight, because they're doing a pretty good job. Glory's putting on a lot of shows, and this is the first gap that they've had where it's 2 months as opposed to 1 month, you know, so I'm really excited about it, and it should be a lot of fun. Next thing I want to talk about is I'm hitting up the stadiums. I haven't been to the stadiums in a while. I was really excited and I really enjoyed breaking them down this past week. Really focused on the card today. There's one that happened really early, and I knew that this card was coming up, and I was curious to see which fights emerged. I didn't get all the fights. I'm going to break down six fights that I got over the last 2 days of fights. Raja Stadium is going to be for most of the fights, the first three. Then I'll do one from the two from the 10th, and then I'll do a new Lumpini fight from the 5th. And normally I wouldn't go back that far because that was actually before my last podcast show. But the reason why around the time before my last podcast show. But the reason why I want to bring up this card is because I'm a big fan of Sprinter, and Sprinter is like, you know, one of the new young stars that has a style that I like. Let's go ahead and start with the card. I'll go with the biggest fight first. Pech Bunchu gets a victory over Chek Mun Tong. And for those who are wondering, hit up Muay Thais, M-U-A-Y, Thais like your Thai, T-I-E-S, Muay Thais. This guy, our girl, whoever, you know, is the person who uploads these fights all the time, they do a great job of getting stadium fights very, very quickly. And this is an event that happened in, you know, Thailand that I was able to get a hold of kind of mid-afternoon. And I'm really excited for the breakdown, and I'll do my best. For those who are familiar with these names, you'll know them because they're kind of names that emerge at the top all the time. And I'll definitely do my best on pronunciation. But if you want to know for sure what I'm talking about, hit up Muay Thais. He does a good job of getting these fights up and out to the people of the world. So Pech Bunchu takes on Chek Mun Tong. And I've talked about Pech Bunchu before. And I remember I had Rob Cox on. Of course, Rob Cox is a guy who does, he runs a gym and he does reporting. And he does a lot of commentary for the stadiums. And when I look at where he is and where he stands in the fight world, he has probably the best perspective of some of the things that happen at the high-level stadiums. And when he says, in agreement to what I've said before, that Pech Bunchu doesn't have necessarily the most pleasing style because he's so clinch-heavy, it's something that you get the wrong, you know, super fan of Thai, you know, Muay Thai fighting. They'll jump all over me about that sin of saying that. But I really do mean it. Sometimes Pech Bunchu, especially when you look at some of his fights, you know, where, you know, with Sanchai, smaller guys, whatever, he goes to that clinch pretty early. And even the Jodvica fights, like just heavy, heavy clinch work, and I could see how people could be turned off to it. This time, in this particular fight, I was really impressed with how he was able to turn Chek Mun Tong in the series of clinching. So, like, they would be in the tie-up, and as he was moving, he would score, and then he'd turn. Or he would see Chek Mun Tong look for his own offense, and he'd turn him. And he did it so much. It's the most I'd ever seen him do it. He was able to add a single body kick. He's not the biggest kicker. He kicks here and there. Very well-timed, smart kicks. Most of the time, he wins in the clinch. And I thought that he's moving well. I thought that Chek Mun Tong had some moments where he's pushing the pace. He was looking to engage, just like Chek Mun Tong was like, I know he's going to clinch, I'm going to prepare for the clinch. So he had some good moments where he was competitive and he was moving him and he was looking to be the aggressor in the clinch. And then there was a series in the fourth round where Pech Bunchu had scored a few times in the clinch. Then he initiated the disengage on his own, and then he landed a really good time body kick, and then he waited, and Chek Mun Tong threw his own return kick back. He caught the kick, and then he scored he went into the clinch, and he scored again, and I thought it was just a beautiful series of offense in the moment. I was very entertained with the fight. Pech Bunchu gets the decision, and it's weird because I just saw a write-up on Pech Bunchu. Basically, it was like top 10 fighters in the world that the world should know. Thai fighters that the world should know. And they had Pech Bunchu as number one. Now, my personal opinion, I would have gone Super Bank. I understand the decision that they went with because Pech Bunchu, a lot of people feel like he was robbed out of Fighter of the Year, despite the fact that I think he went like 5-3-1 or something like that, if I'm remembering correctly. But he stopped Jodvica's streak, and he beat Sanchai twice in a row. And those are clearly the most significant wins that anybody was going to put together. Instead, because I think of his record, they decided to go with Pompeyuk. So I still think that I'm fine with somebody going with Pech Bunchu. He is a really awesome, you know, in the clinch. You're going to learn stuff from him if you watch him. He's very, very skilled. And I thought that this was one of his more entertaining performances. Really, really pleased by this performance. Going to go ahead and move to Pech Morakot as he takes on Quang Khoi. I'm a big fan of Quang Khoi. I've mentioned his fights before. Here was a fight that just it just kept changing in pace. And at the beginning, Kwangco had the right leg going. He's definitely scoring the right high kick well, knocking Petr Morakot off balance, scoring to the body. And early in the third, he had it going as well. And then Petr Morakot, who kept pushing the pace, did a really good job of scoring a big power 1-2. And after that 1-2 landed, I can see that Kwangco was trying to get his head back. He's trying to get his demeanor back because it was such a clean score. And in that clean score, he was, you know, losing in the clinch all of a sudden. He was losing to the pressure of Petr Morakot. So as the third round went on, I felt confident that Petr Morakot had taken the third round. It was really good work by him, and he was excited after the third round. He's going to round four. Petr Morakot wants to build on it, and he wants to continue with that pressure offense. And then, all of a sudden, in the series of that offense, Kwangco made the adjustment to run him into body kicks. He would just step back, run him into a kick, step back, run him into a knee. He kept playing off of the aggressiveness of Petr Morakot and kept running him into offense. And then all of a sudden, Petr Morakot, who was trying to be the aggressor, was just running into strikes. And then the clinch would happen and he would, you know, he wouldn't get an opportunity to get into offense at all. He would get to the body and it kind of turned one-sided. You know, it's like one thing I didn't mention from the Petr Bunchu fight was in the beginning of the fifth round, Petr Bunchu just kind of went to full clinch positions. You would almost see in MMA where the guy can't pummel back or doesn't know to pummel back. But he went there for 1 minute without throwing a strike where he just kind of wrapped Chamoktong. He just kept wrapping him up in the full clinch. He didn't let him get any offense off. He just kind of schooled him for a little bit in the fifth round. Here was Petr Morakot, who kept, you know, pushing forward. He was being schooled in a very different way because he just kept running into offense. And then I thought that we got early into the fifth. Kwangco just kind of, you know, played the game, and then he was able to get a decision. But really entertaining win for Kwangco. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Jom Pichet as he takes on Kong Denai. Jom Pichet is J-O-M-P-I-C-H-I-T as he goes against K-O-N-G-D-A-N-A-I. Kong Denai, like I said, go to Muay Thai, and these fights are all available so you can follow them. The reason why I think anybody who is a fan of fighting or if you're a learning student of full rules Muay Thai, there are some fights that I recommend to you guys to watch just so you can see what offensive diversity looks like in a high-level Muay Thai fight. Jom Pichet put on an absolute clinic of scoring so many diverse ways. It's the way you want to see it. He scored consistently with the body kick. He had these high kicks that threw Kong Denai off balance. But my favorite thing that he did was his work in the clinch in terms of he would get the double arm tie up. So he'd have both arms in the biceps to kind of keep Kong Denai from getting elbows and getting full clinch. And he'd play there and then he'd slide in an elbow and then he'd slide in a knee and then he'd turn him and then he just kept mixing up the offense. He'd push him and then he'd fire a kick. It's such diverse offense, and not enough guys in the world do this kind of offense or show this kind of offensive effectiveness. Jom Pichet put on an absolute clinic, and I think you guys should all get the opportunity to sit down and watch this fight. It's definitely a must for people who want to see what high-level full rules Muay Thai looks like. Next fight I want to talk about, and this is, again, the Jom Pichet victory was on the 10th. I'm going to go with another card from the 10th, and this has got a more prominent name as Fanek gets a decision victory over Pampayak. Pampayak, of course, fight of the year, as I mentioned before. Pampayak had a really awesome streak at 122 pounds, and now he's moved up to what would be about 129 pounds. And I think that despite the fact that Fanek was, you know, the bigger, you know, stronger guy for the weight class naturally, I thought that Pampayak for moments was able to play single kick, you know, returns with him, and they were able to, you know, grapple, and he'd have some moments. But then there was a series where, and this is, if you don't know how to pummel in Muay Thai, you gotta watch this fight. Watch round three, I believe, of this fight, or both guys are just, as soon as the other person gets top position, you see the other person pummel the ham through right away. And as soon as you see a shoulder cut off one side, they go to the other side and pummel that side. Like, it's just really, really good stuff. in that exchanging, you're going to see Pompeo, you got to really pay attention because it's his, I think as the angle has it, it's going to be his left elbow. He's going to slide that in. He's going to have just enough room to pop a left uppercut elbow. Like it's just the elbow takes a up range like an uppercut. And he scored a flash down on Pompeo. And then when Pompeo got up, he kind of came at him really hard. Pompeo really bounced back from the flash elbow considering. Like it just, it's the kind of thing that when it happens, because you don't get the standing eight count, guys can be all over you and just kind of finish you off there. And Pompeo was able to regain composure. He's able to try to come back late in the fight, but the damage was already done. Despite the fact that he scored quite well down the stretch, as soon as you get that kind of flash down, it's almost impossible to get a victory unless you score another down. So good stuff by, you know, Fonik, and it's Fonik in terms of Phonaik. And I thought that he did a great job of being the stronger, superior guy, scoring good offense. But, man, I'm telling you, they're pummeling work in the clinch. You just got to watch it. They just keep working back and forth, back and forth. Another fight that I'm going to talk about is the Pett versus Sprinter fight. This fight ended in a draw, and it really became a battle of body kicks. And I think Sprinter, who I really enjoy, and he's put on some action fights, this wasn't one of the more action paced one. I thought that he was like, I can get my body kick in clean despite his guard. And defensively, Sprinter done some good things. There was a period of time where Pett threw like three body kicks in a row, and Sprinter all three times was able to get up his knee guard, and he was able to block all three because he got his knee so high. He literally blocked all three on the shin. And I think that he got up. And then as he was up in the fifth, I think that he allowed Pett to score all the offense in the extra. And I don't think that Pett was that far down after the third and fourth. And I think because that they were playing just a single kick game and seeing who can get their kick through and not as much clinch, just a lot of single kick score. And Pett, Sprinter believed in it so much, he thought he was up on the card, whereas Pett kept pushing, and he was able to earn a draw after the decision. So it's a good example of if you want to see how they can score the body kicks clean despite the guard, Sprinter versus Pett is a really, really good fight. I saved this fight for last, even though it happened on the June 11th card that I mentioned before. You are seldom going to get the Muay Thai or kickboxing combat of action that you got in the 109 battle between Wan Chai and Saturn Munluck. It is my standing fight of the year right now. So you just heard it. Fight of the year right now, Wan Chai, Wanchai versus Saturn Munluck. Saturn Munluck. That fight right there, it's just all action in the clinch, elbow fest, knee fest, combinations, body kicks. Like, it's just all action. In the middle of it, the main separator, Saturn Munluck in the clinch was able to score a big-time elbow that, like, weakened the knees of Wan Chai, but he's able to recover, and then he just went to work, landed big offense, and then as soon as you think that Wan Chai is going to get KO'd, he battles back. He battles back with his own offense. It is high-level, awesome fighting. Saturn Munluck was able to get the decision, but it's the fight that you absolutely have to see of all the fights. If you don't watch any of the fights, and you better watch all the fights, if you don't watch any of the stadium fights that I just mentioned, go to YouTube, go to Muay Thai's, go to watch Wan Chai versus Saturn Munluck. It is an absolutely awesome, awesome high-level Muay Thai fest. Going to go ahead and end the show on one more fight, just because somehow Yi Long, who kind of fights in what would be considered a, you know, monk-esque type of, you know, fight gear, he's kind of gotten some internet raves because he was in a fight where he has hands down and he took a lot of offense from a guy, and people said this guy can't get KO'd, and they didn't take into account who the guy was fighting or how the shots were landed. I don't care about how well you can take a punch. A lot of people can take punches well, okay? Not a lot of people can land punches well. The elite people in the world know how to land offense well. So that's what I want to see from you. And Yi Long had some moments early because he kept scoring some sweeps on Bukau. But then Bukau, all of a sudden, he's like, hey, if you have an invincible, you know, head, you ain't got no invincible body. And he started killing with body kicks, killing with teeps, killing with step-up knees. And just all of a sudden, Yi Long was just reduced to just throwing these crazy flurries, and it's in China, so the crowd was cheering for him, but he just wasn't skilled enough. And I want to warn the Muay Thai kickboxing community of this, because it happens sometimes. When you guys see videos online of people who can take offense and, you know, laugh and smile and keep getting up or whatever, don't praise that. praise offensive effectiveness, because there are some tough people out there who've got some tough jaws, but that's not a skill. You know what I'm saying? That's just something. Mark Hunt is not justified by the fact that he's got a good chin. Mark Hunt's justified by the fact that he can freaking crack. He's a really good fighter, and his good chin leads to him having the opportunities to land good offense later. Yi Long, he's got the chin part maybe, but he ain't got the offense part. So don't go praising him and putting him up on your, you know, your Facebook walls and talking about, Shaolin monk, it can't be KO'd. I don't want to see stuff like that or whatever. So when people dress like Yi Long, or people have that kind of aura, that type of presentation, don't fall for it. Go ahead and post them and be like, hey, man, it is good that he's got a really good chin, but it's more impressive if he can land really good offense. Be encouraging. Don't be, like, putting people down. So don't be like, oh, Yi Long is an idiot, you know what I'm saying, or he's not any good at kickboxing. What I would say instead is Yi Long has got a really good chin. If he can put the kickboxing behind it, he can have some offensive success. This doesn't put him down. It just simply says you've got a chin. That's something that not everybody's born with. But you've got to have offensive skill in this game. And I don't want people to get praise for just not being knocked out. That's not a skill that I want to be known for. Try to build some skill behind the fact that you were born with a really good jaw. Bukau did what he had to do. Fight got ugly at some period of time. Scored some good knees. Bukau's in need of a guy who's got some kickboxing skill, so we can bring out his skill level as well. Good stuff by Bukau, getting the hand raised and doing a good job. But really, I want the kickboxing community to make wise decisions when they see stuff like this happen. When you see it happen, again, don't hate, because everybody in the world hates. You see it all the time with people, with whether it's their views on politics, or their views on people of faith, or their views on whoever's famous or whatever. You see that hate all the time. I don't want that to happen. I want us to be like in an educational way. You see some videos where people have got like, you know, super chins and that kind of stuff, whatever. Like, hey, what's more impressive is if he can get his offense to join that chin. That's what I'm hoping to see from him down the road. Now, again, it's a casual audience. So they're just going to post what they see and that they think is cool. But I really think us as a kickboxing community, as a Muay Thai community, let's not praise people who take a lot of punches, because we know what those guys look like when they get to 15, 16 years old. It's not a tough road. We want to praise skill in this game. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank you for following the podcast. I actually went long today, man. I tried to get as deep as I could. I know some people ask me to be more technical sometimes and talk about things that I see specific in fights. I hope I was able to do that part for you. Thank you very much for listening, and hopefully I'll be back next week. I'm trying to get a guest. I won't tell you who the guest is. I'm trying to get a guest for next week's show. So thanks a lot, and peace.